Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I have as my guest tonight, Proben Gregory, who's currently playing with the Beach Boys, but he's done a lot of different session work and a lot of stuff as a sideman for a lot of different people like Paul McCartney, Eric Clapton, Billy Joel, Badly Drawn Boy, Andrew Goldheart, and one of my favorite bands, Jan and Dean, that were rivals with the Beach Boys. Anyway, we're going to talk a little bit. He does a lot of different things, and he's a multi-instrumentalist, which makes it even more interesting. He plays guitar, bass, banjo, keyboards, trumpet, French horn, flugelhorn, and we're going to talk about this other instrument he plays with the Brian Wilson band, the Tannerin. But first, I'm going to play a clip to open up. This is the song Hold On Dear Brother. This is from the Brian Wilson soundstage video. And I cut together two parts of him. If I'm correct, it's a Tele with P90s on it, right?
That's right.
It's a Tele. So take a listen and note at the beginning what I cut was the opening part where he's doing little fills, which are really cool what he's doing. And then I cut to the lead. So take a listen and tell him, and we'll move from there. And I just lost it. Where is it? It's here. Welcome to the show, Proben. It's a pleasure to have you here. Very cool sound, and I love the little fills that you do. You're going to hear a lot of things that happen behind the vocals tonight. There's a lot of clips I pull because he does some really tasty things there. But tell me a little bit about what you're using there. That's a great sound. That's a Telewit P90s I saw in the video.
Yeah, it's one of those thin line. What do they call that? The thin line one. There's a name for it I should know.
But that's not a standard thing. Usually they have humbuckers on them or something like that for the thin line.
Right, I think that's right. And I asked that they put P90s on because I'd enjoyed having them on an SG that I'd played when I was at the Grammys. I had an SG with P90s. But and I've not been a P90s guy my whole life. It's sort of a late discovery for me. So I'd rather like that. Oh, by the way, I wanted to correct one thing that you said just right out of the gate. You said that I'm playing the Beach Boys. I did that 1 year in 2012, and since then I've been in the Brian Wilson Band for the past 17 years, and that's my main gig. So it was only the 1 year. 2012.
But you still played with them. That's part of history.
I made it to the big show, as they say in the baseball.
That's interesting too. But how was it much different playing? Because the music, Brian Wilson has a much broader body of music now, but I mean playing Jan and Dean and playing the Beach Boys. How was you played the two top surf bands?
Yeah, I mean, I was only at a very late version when Jan had already passed. With Dean. I wasn't in the great touring version that was around in the 80s, and I came on in the sort of mid 2000s, and I actually haven't played with Dean in a while, but he and I maintain a good friendship. He's a great guy.
he's funny. I love seeing like the
funny.
Tammy show when they're coming out on the skateboard, and they sidewalk surf over there. Yeah. But anyway, what were you using besides the Tele? What was the amp that you were using there? Because you're getting a nice distortion out of that amp that you used on the Brian.
I think I was actually using a little Boss Yellow OD1.
Really?
The amp was not being broken up at all. It was just a conventional. I think that wasn't my twin. I think that was a house twin on that show. So I was just putting it at my standard setting, fives all the way across the board, not with the treble accentuated on the amp. And I think it was just my OD1 with the distortion at about one and the level up, so maybe there was some breakup from the
it's just speaker. A little bit like if you're really it sounded to me like turning a if it was a twin for example turning it up to like about six and then digging in when you want to get it to break up a little bit. It had that I call bloom,
right? Oh, great.
And it's a great sound.
That might have been the front of house guy's magic.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up, you came to L.A., and then how you got into the scene, because you've played with some pretty amazing people.
Yes, I have been very fortunate in that way. I grew up as a faculty brat, living all over the United States, lived in, Palo Alto for the Summer of Love, wishing that I was, a little bit older than I was, so that I could be part of that. So my parents took me to see the Grateful Dead at the Hate. Down in the Panhandle, and so some other bands that I saw in '67, whose names I don't even know them now. But in any event, then we moved to New Hampshire, where my father's family is from, and pretty much grew up in New Hampshire. I consider myself to be a New Hampshireite, even though I've been out here in LA for 35 years. But and I went to Oberlin College. I did not go to the conservatory. I wanted to go there. I ended up with what amounted to an electronic music minor. Just from the amount of classes I took. And I've been playing along with, records all the time. And my roommate secretly taped me playing along with Steely Dan or Zappa or something and submitted that tape to Berklee School of Music and GIT. And I got into both schools receiving these sort of phantasmagoric letters saying, you've been accepted to a school. I'm like, I didn't apply to this school. What is this? But I ended up going to GIT, and I had a good time there. And started playing in bands, two or three at a time, trying to get signed, sort of to no effect for many years. And then finally, in the 90s, I was playing with this group, the Wonderments, and we played at a tribute to Brian Wilson, about 94 or 5, I think it was. I'm trying to remember the exact year. And Brian took note of us because we apparently had done well enough that he, you know, kept, we were in his mind. And then when he was forming a band in late 98, I think, we got the call to come out and audition. He was living outside of Chicago. And most of us in the band and the Wondermints made it in. And that's been, when you say of all those other people, Clapton, McCartney, anything big that I've been lucky enough to play with has mainly come from my connection with Brian Wilson and that band, and being either at you know, charity shows or someone wanting us to back them up. Or in one case, we were the house band at a Radio City tribute to Brian Wilson in 2001. We got to meet a lot of great people, you know, Jimmy Webb, David Crosby, Elton John. Mm-hmm. It was amazing being the ones playing Beach Boys music a little bit. I mean, they would make their own arrangements. They weren't all just like the record. But and then, you know, things sort of went on over the years from there. McCartney in particular has done a couple
of... Well, there's a little side note that I was reading in your bio that 10 years before you did the Brian, you got the gig with Brian Wilson, you sent a letter to Capitol, or you posted something basically asking him to put out the Smile album. And then you ended up playing on the Smile album later.
Who could have known? It's true. I took out an ad, in a paragraph-sized ad in the Reader, L.A. Reader, which was an old weekly paper that now no longer exists. Mm-hmm. The weekly lasted a little longer, and then it went away. But anyway, I think I have a copy of it somewhere. I can't remember if it's something like, "Release Smile" was the banner headline. And then I, you know, said, "Please, anyone at Capitol listening, this is amazing music that needs to see the light of day," et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, of course, at that point, whenever that was happening in the late 80s, it fell on deaf ears. But
yes, well, I'm glad it came out. It's an amazing body of work. But now playing with Brian, how is that? Are you constricted? Do you have to try to emulate everything on the album? Or does Brian give you a lot of leeway to take it where you want to take it?
In deference to the fans who seem to want to really enjoy hearing things like the record, mm-hmm. the band tries to do things as much as we can verbatim. There are a few things where there's leeway. Like if it's a sort of iconic solo, I mean, I use that term sort of loosely, but if there's a solo that we think is important, like on Dance, 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 there's a 12-string solo, I try to play the one from the record or close to it. The sax player sometimes gets his a little more leeway because there weren't that many sax solos on Brian's songs, but Brian wants to have one there, and he just points at him, and off he goes. You know, it used to be that the live Beach Boys, especially in the sort of the Carl Wilson era, would do very different versions of songs. Like they do a version of "Help Me, Rhonda," where you know the main lick of the song would be something like, you know, "Since she put me down," et cetera. It would be that feel instead of the one on the record with the deedly dee 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 dee. So that was great. They did that, and it, you know, differentiated them from whoever else was going to be doing that song, Jan and Dean or any of the tribute bands or whatever. In any event, we've tried to take them, sort of go back to the originals. Brian has wanted that way too, and the fans seem to really like that. And now these days, the Mike Love-led Beach Boys are also, I think, going back to being a little more careful and trying to capture those original sounds too, and mm-hmm. doing quite well at it.
Well, like, for example, some of the earlier songs, I know, well, the Wrecking Crew did a lot of their guitar work, and the whole rhythm section was the Wrecking Crew. But do you guys, like, use the 12 strings too? Live, the electric 12-string, because was a key part of their...
Oh, sure. I have one on stage with me at all times. Sometimes the other guitar player, I think he has one at his beck and call. I end up playing most of the 12-string parts.
What are you using?
I'm using a Dan Electro reissue of the... I don't even know what the model number is, but it's two short horns, and you see pictures of it from the early 60s.
Mm-hmm. Well, you play a lot of different instruments. You utilize that in the show, right? I mean, do you play horn?
I do.
You play horn?
I play French horn in the beginning of God Only Knows. I play trumpet on any of the Pet Sounds tunes that require that. I get to play the theremin on Good Vibrations. So my two marquee moments of the show are always the intro of God Only Knows. You know, there'll be a spotlight on me, or I'll be up in the mix and mm-hmm. just playing piano and me and a little bit of brushes. and the alto flute, and then of course on Good Vibrations, woo-hoo, you know, the
so that instrument actually wasn't a theremin, it's a like an offshoot of it called the tannerin.
Right.
Or, can you explain that a little bit, because it's interesting?
Sure.
It's T-A-N-N-E-R-I-N, if you want to look it up and Google it. It's an interesting instrument.
Right. It was also called by its inventor, who was Paul Tanner, thus the tannerin. He called it the electrotheremin, which is a little odd because the proper theremin is an electric instrument that generates electromagnetic fields mm-hmm. that you disturb with your hands. And the story, as I understand it, which may be open to some debate, is that Paul Tanner, who had been a trombonist in the Glenn Miller Band and was still doing sessions in the 60s. That was when through My Favorite Martian and some other things, the day the Earth stood still, the theremin was becoming a sound, although it was mostly being used for like sort of a ghostly effect, like whoa, woo, 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 woo. It's crazy, yeah. Not melodies, not trying to play in an ensemble with other instruments. So then there came to be a time when there was a call for the theremin to be playing with other instruments in tune. And there were very few people, apart from Clara Rockmore, who was someone that was associated with Leon Theremin, the inventor of the theremin. Mm-hmm. She was a great artist, but there weren't that many people in Los Angeles area in particular that were at the time in the 60s. So Paul Tanner was there, and he said, I think I can make a sound like that with a much easier instrument. So he got some engineer friends to help him out, and he made a box that has a telescoping rod with a pointer that points at a picture of the keyboard. So, and it'll give you a rough idea of the note. It's not always accurate, but it's in the ballpark. So he made this and played it on a couple of Beach Boys songs. He played it on Just Wasn't Made for These Times, Wild Honey, and of course, most notably, Good Vibrations. So the original one, unfortunately, is lost in the sands of time, but the schematic exists, and a friend of ours, Tom Polk, well, he's become a friend, had the schematic or was able to get it and built one for Darian Sahanaja of the Wonderments, and he turned it, sort of fell to me to play it in the Brian Band. So we're playing one of the few ones that is out there in the world. I mean, he's made others.
Do the Beach Boys, the band themselves, do they use one of those?
They don't. They generally have a keyboard with a ribbon controller or a portamento, as far as I understand it. I'll have to ask Timmy Bonhomme, who is in charge of the keyboard mm-hmm. duties over there.
No, it's an interesting, because I remember listening to Good Vibrations. It's like, how did they get that so accurate? Like, you know, you got to really know the distance from the theremin, but that's
right,
it's really pretty agile from what I've seen of the demos that they show on there. You can really do some cool melodic things with that.
You can.
Well, let me go ahead and I'm going to play another clip of Ryan, and this is another one. From what you told me in your notes, if I'm correct, this is You've Got a Friend in Me, and you're using a Gibson Melody Maker, if I'm correct mm-hmm. on this. But take a listen. He's doing fills and around him, and I want to talk a little bit of your approach to that
on slide.
Slide, yeah, you're playing slide on this one, and okay, let me go ahead and play that for you. Here we go. Now, you're using the Melody Maker. Now, is that an amp cranked, or are you using a distortion box on that?
I think, actually, in that case, I did crank the amp. I think that was a Galleon Kruger whose model number is escaping me. I just had it. That one doesn't even get that dirty, so that one was on 10. And I was just, mostly, I was playing with my fingers on that, which I don't generally do. I'm mostly a pick guy.
Yeah. No, it's a great sound. I mean, you're getting a really, but I like the way you interplay behind the vocal. Now, in working with, well, you have several vocalists in the band, right? So
that's
there's
right.
a lot of people singing all the time. How do you approach that? I mean, yes, at one point you're basically just emulating what the record does, but do you Are you looking for holes, or are you looking for your little the space in there to play lead? Because there's a lot of instrumentation going on in there.
Right. In that case, on that song, I had told them that I was going to overplay and that they should edit out what they didn't want. And they ended up keeping, Brian decided to keep a lot of what I did, probably more than I would have if I was doing the mix. But, you know, it's his record. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I played in some places where I was stepping on the vocal, frankly, on what we just heard. But because I was just trying to think, oh, there's not much of a hole here, so I just got to do something. Okay, I'll do a, I can't just go ba-da and then get out. That's not really quite what the thing called for.
Right. No, I think it works. I mean, it's mm-hmm. kind of it's interwoven between the vocal and stuff. It kind of mm-hmm. comes in and out. And then you have the brass in there.
All right, I was on trumpet on that one, too.
You were playing trumpet? Okay, I was going to ask you that.
Later take.
Yeah, but the way it interweaves, I'm playing that was the tail end where he's doing a couple little fills, and it had a really gritty sound to it, and then it ended. But the gist of the song before that, there's a lot of stuff going on. He's answering a lot of what Brian's singing, or I think it's Brian singing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's answering, because on the live thing, that was on the other cut, Hold On Dear Brother, there was another vocalist.
Yes, his name is Nate Royce.
Nate Royce.
R-E-U-S-S.
And a great singer, too.
Yeah.
Great vocalist. Now, I'm going to play another clip, and this is an interesting sound. It's from the... I'm trying to remember if this was from that group that you were at. Let me play it, and you tell me. You set this up for me. It's Twinkies or Drugs.
That's just me. That's just me in my bedroom with a cassette.
Okay. I thought it was
It wasn't even a cassette.
I thought it was the Wonderments, but I wasn't.
No. This is me. That's why there's no drums, because I don't really play drums, and I didn't have a drum machine. This is like 1984 or 3, I think, when I did this.
But this is a very cool guitar sound, and we'll talk about how you did that. Let me play that real quick.
Still makes me laugh.
That is a cool lead. Now, we got to talk about what you're using there, because it doesn't. It has a wah sound, but the filter is different. It sounds like it's an auto wah, or it's triggering from something, because you're going really fast, and it's like blah 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 blah.
Right.
Your poor foot would be going nuts with that.
You're exactly right. It's a Boss. I believe it was called an auto wah. It was
okay.
Something like I don't think it was AW, but it had a -1 at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
I still have it. It's from the 80s. And I had it at a setting that I liked, and I even turned it off and on during the solo. My favorite part of the solo was at the end, where I just decided I was going to do what I called a spider on the strings, and I took two hands and just went, you know, just back and forth on the strings, up and down, and then tried to get back to an A chord in time, which I didn't really do, which you can hear.
Now, what guitar were you using, and what amp is, because that just there's some good distortion in there too.
Oh, that was this. It was either this or the identical one I have of it. It's a Yamaha G100, and I had was that Melody Maker, which is my first guitar, my first electric guitar, which was $50, and I still have it. It was it just has tens on it. It only has one pickup, so there's no there's no question of what pickup it is. And I probably had a little amp distortion, but it was another either the Boss OD1 or it might have been. I think I had a...
Because those amps are pretty clean, right? You were
right.
Telling me about that.
I mean,
it has
a distortion channel, but the distortion is not very good on that because it's all transistor.
Mm-hmm.
But for that, the purposes of that song, it almost didn't matter.
No, it worked. And well, the distortion you're getting, it brings out the sweep of the filter a little bit. It brings it out, gives it a little more texture to work with.
That's true.
So it's that's a cool sound, because you just kind of go nuts, and it's like, ah, it's cool. Now, I'm going to play. You do some really interesting sounds, and Well, actually, before I play this clip, because I want to talk about some of the different things that you're doing, I have some questions on this song. It's something. Well, let me play the clip, and then we're going to talk about the couple of the effects that you brought in today. You brought some stuff in studio, which I want to play. And the song I'm going to play is I edited together. This is Hands of Time, and we'll play Hands of Time because I wanted to ask you about this lead. You do this really cool funky rhythm thing at the beginning, and then I cut to this lead. It sounds like some type of an octave thing, or else it wasn't a synth guitar, because I asked you that before the show. But let me play this, and let's just break it down a little bit, and then we'll get into some of the effects, because this kind of shows some of the different things that you're doing sound-wise. You get some pretty interesting sounds. So here's Hands of Time.
Interesting. I'd totally forgotten about that era of my production. That was done on a cassette four track. What you heard, that was all through the Rockman. At one point, I was very interested in trying to quell some of the Rockman's signature sounds. Like, he had a certain EQ that Tom Scholz put in that, and sometimes I liked it, like that little sort of rhythm I did up the front. That was the clean setting, or what, of the four things they had, that was probably number two of the four being the most distorted, one being the most clean. The solo was at the most distorted setting, and I double tracked the solo, and then I sang along also double tracking. So that's the sound, is doing a sort of a George Benson. And I just practiced it enough that I tried to get it as close as I could without it, one sounding too different from the other. So that's two voices and two guitars making that sound.
Which guitar did you use? Because it's that there's a one light, you hold the note and you bend it a little bit, but it almost sounds like a synth. It's just the characteristic of it.
Nice. It's a Strat. It was a 1980 Strat with a big heavy maple thing. It's like a Les Paul. It still hurts my shoulder now to think of it. And that was my main guitar for many years.
No, it's an interesting, and I love that shimmer to the rhythm. That's well, now I know from the Rockman that chorus, that had a good chorus in there.
I would do is, I depending on if I was going to double track something, I would do one take with something EQ'd at the amp, because what I used to do with the cassette four track was just put a mic right in front of the speaker and listen to the headphone. The one cassette would be playing, going to my headphone, and going into a mixer, and then which would be the mic from the amp. And I would try to get it to so that everything was in their sonic place, so that I had everything below, the 10K would be accentuated, so would 500. And then the next one, those would be reversed, or something else would be accentuated in either the double, or if I was going to do hard pan, which I could amazingly do with two cassette players. I didn't even have a four track. It was really just recording from, I take the cassette in the second instance that I'd recorded both parts on, put it back into the first player. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now I had three parts, and then of course you'd lose some signal. So I had to do things like bass that would have to be done first, because that didn't matter. 10 generations down, you could still hear the note and it wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. Some of the high-end guitars could not be done first. They had to be done later. So it was a thought process to make this all function.
Yeah, no, that's the problems of analog when you were especially ping-ponging, a lot of ping-ponging. But no, it's interesting because what you're talking about is what a lot of engineers I've heard talk about, where you EQ to put it in a certain pocket. So if you have, the upper range, you were saying, like you put one guitar and then you have the next instrument or whatever in this range, it gives you a cleaner mix without having the boost and it allows it to blend better.
Exactly.
So, and getting its little notch in there. So you kind of EQ it to fit in that little spot, which is interesting. That's a very, it allows, you can hear it in the piece because you can hear the things that are going on in the mix. You can hear all the different guitars, or even in the layers when you're scanning, you can hear the two voices.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear that's two voices. So, which is a credit on cassette depth. That's a good mix. That's a really cool mix. But let's talk a little bit about, because you play with a lot of different effects, and you're constantly, from what I've heard in these clips, is that you really create really interesting, unique sounds. But you brought a couple of toys with you today, so
mm-hmm.
let's take a look at that. Go ahead and first, you brought the what I call the squawk box, from Heil. But
sure,
a pretty
little change the input around.
Okay, he's changing over to his. He was using my little Marshall, just so you know what's happening, and now he's in his Yamaha amp.
This is the old trusty Yamaha G100. I have two of those since the early 80s. I can't believe they still work.
Great amp.
Nice and clean.
Okay.
Anyway, so I'm going out of the, instead of the speaker, I'm going into the an old purple fiberglass Heil talk box. It's probably from the late 70s or mm-hmm. early 80s. I think it's made of fiberglass. So let's see if it's actually working now. I think I need to boost it just a little bit to get it to come out more.
Now, while he's doing that, let me explain what he's doing. Is basically the Heil is a treble driver, if I'm correct, a horn driver.
Mm-hmm.
And he's cranking it into the horn driver. Actually, it's probably distorting a little bit to give the character to it. And it's coming out of a tube that goes into his mouth. So he uses his mouth as a cavity to mold the sound of it. So you can hear when he opens and closes his mouth, you get this like, wow. But
right.
You could do a little bit more. You can make it talk.
I should be able to get it to do more of the, if this was taped to the microphone like it's supposed to be, it won't be.
Now he's kind of biting down on it while he's, but he could actually talk. You can do.
Yeah, if I'd be able to do the famous Frampton, the. That's supposed to be "Do You Feel Like I Do," although if
right, well, no,
if I didn't have to hold it in my mouth with my teeth, which I currently have to do, I could get a little more expression.
Let me try something. Hold on a second. Let me hold that and put it in place so you don't have to bite down on it.
Also, excuse. I haven't even played this thing until yesterday for like 20 years. So. Hold on. Let me do this one here. Nah, it's not doing it. Not doing it what I want. I wanted to do this help me thing from, anyway. Epic fail there.
Well, no, you get the idea with what it does. And obviously, depending on the type of amp, I found that you get more articulation the more you crank it up and distort it.
Maybe I should have done that too, but this is being a show of finite minutes. I don't want to take the time to do
this. But anyway, it's a cool little device. It's been around for a while. Joe Walsh and Frampton are probably most famous for using it. But let's talk about the other little toy that you brought in here.
Oh yeah.
Which has been around for a while.
Do
you use this when you play live?
No, I've tried it. The old one that I have, I brought two. I have an old original one. This is called the Ebo. It's not exactly an electromagnetic field. That's too simplistic, but it's a little U-shaped box that I'm going to hold over the pickup, and when I do that, it's going to make, whoops, I'm going to turn that down. Let me try using the single coil pickup. If I can't bend too much or it gets out of the range of the where the string is, but you can just set it to, I'll get it down to the standard octave.
So basically what it's doing, it's causing the string to vibrate.
Right, so you just move your finger around up and down the neck, or as in that case, I actually switched strings at one point, and this is, could in the old Ebo, that was very hard to do, because as soon as you got to another string, it wouldn't be vibrating, and it would take about a half a second to get up to snuff, and at that point, you were on off of the melody, you wouldn't be able to get anything. But you can get some beautiful, if you do a chorus of these, like you're one doing a melody here, and get the other one to do. And those together almost sound like a choir. It doesn't sound, there's no attack. So that half of the guitar event is erased or not available.
Right. And because it doesn't have that attack, you can do some cool effects. You can kind of emulate like a backwards taped thing.
Yeah, to a certain degree.
It gets that kind of a feel sometimes.
And again, this is something that I also has been collecting dust in my garage, and when I knew I was coming on the show, I pulled it out yesterday and put new battery in and went, how do I play this again? So I was sort of, I'm not at the peak of
it. It takes a little bit to do, but it's quite effective when you use it. It's a very effective tool.
And I've heard it just recently with some like indie bands. In fact, I went on YouTube just mm-hmm. to see. And there were a whole bunch of people that were using it lately. And the talk box is making a comeback, too. So I'm like, hey, what goes around comes around. Hold on to your effects, kids, because in another year, that thing you were going to throw away or sell for
never
$10.
Sell. Yeah. Never sell. I can't emphasize that enough. No, anyway, no, it's a very cool sound. Those are some interesting stuff. Have you ever done any processing on your horns? Have you ever played
a little? I did a sort of a Brecker Brothers thing. They used to do phasing and some flanging. And I did one tune called Bangkok Prunes, which is something I did when I was at GIT. And I did a little home recording on the two cassette player method that I was telling you about. And I did put a phaser on the trumpet, and it was cool. I liked it. But live, I don't know. I'm becoming more of a traditionalist in my old age. And
so you just play into a mic, or do you have a pickup on it?
I generally play into a mic so I can get the proximity effect. Like some, I would have one attached to the bell, but sometimes I want to, you know, sneak up on the mic. What up?
Yeah.
You know, you can't really go really close. You have to sort of be way off mic. What up? And then that gets the.
So you actually move around in and out of the microphone to get certain effects.
Yeah, with the horn. The horn.
Very cool.
Wish I could do that with the guitar, but the mic is like,
you
know,
just gotta put the amp on rollers, you know, so you can move it. You can move it back and forth. But let me play another clip, and I want to ask you about this. Let's see. It's where you're. There's a backwards thing happening. This is the teardrop explodes, and it's some really cool wah. I have to admit that the little fills that you're playing with the wah are just amazing. And listen to this. But there's a thing that's happening. It sounds to me like a backwards clavinet. There's like this kind of it's a more nasally type of sound. I don't know if that's a guitar because
I'm pretty sure that was not me. That was probably Morley Bartnoff on keys. He was either ran the tape backwards or he had some sound that would, you know, on the that would when he hit the key would make it, you know,
right
would give you that backwards sound. I can't remember exactly, but let's hear the track.
But this is a classic wah, and I what you put in the notes was that this is a 335, mm-hmm. which is the classic sound. But take a listen. This is Teardrop Explodes.
Break from her routine. Can't blame her at all. Yeah.
she might forsake the in-between. I'm not making the call, yeah. Inflatable mall accepts us all and leaves us dead. Still looking for my mixtape, but just like Lily Collins said. She's explaining it all, yeah. She's explaining it all. She made the call. She's explaining it all, yeah. She's explaining it all. Mr. Mellencamp, find me a hip small town that's free of them serial rednecks and all, yeah. With a righteous deli, arty bookstore, and Chomsky's begin down at the Veterans Mall, yeah. Inflatable stone hit to the bone, clench openly. Deputized, hypnotized, till I realized it was a story. She's explained it all, yeah. She's explained it all. And she made the call. She's explained it all, yeah.
I just love that wah work. It's just great because it just fits right, goes in and out of the vocal track. But there's another guitar going in the chorus on my right side. And what's that guitar?
Oh, I wasn't paying attention to that.
It's a clean guitar, but it's kind of...
Right. That might have been Stu, the singer, who also plays guitar, but it also could have been me. I remember that day because it was they had a beautiful deluxe, which was one of the best ones I ever played through it, and that's what that was recorded on. And it was the 335. Yeah, I had a Dunlop wah. What was the model number?
Crybaby?
I think I had a Crybaby. I now have the one that has like the Q knob. I think it's a modified Cry, but I didn't have that. That was like 2002 or 3, that recording. With the Negro Problem, which is, you know, you got to be careful when you say that name, but the leader of the band happens to be black. So,
oh, really?
It's anyway, yeah, that was so that other sound that was a keyboard that was Morley on a sound that I think when he hit it, there was no attack, and then it would sort of phase in and out. And
yeah, it was like a reverse effect, it was like, like he was using a volume pedal on it,
right?
But it's great sound, and it worked well with the wah.
Right, right.
The clavinet really worked. That was a great instrument for that. But that wah work was just, it was killer. And it's great how you approach around the vocal. Now, was the vocal track, was there a scratch track, or did you just play? How did you, in your head,
I seem to remember that there was a scratch.
You were playing to a voice.
Because I'm usually pretty careful about that. I don't want to step on the vocal when I can avoid it. So if there is no vocal, I would like to know if someone has just a general idea of, is this long notes? Or if you can't give me a scratch, give me an idea, and then I'll try to work around that idea.
Okay. And then also, too, that was, that great pairing of the 335 with the wah, which is a killer sound. Mm. Now, what do you use? I know that we mentioned that you use the Tele and you use a Strat Live. What do you use to get the 335? Because I presume you wouldn't take your prize 335 on the road.
Well, a song like that, I know it was a 335, but I could have... That had Strat characteristics to me, single coil, you know, solid body. So I, on the road, I tend to go with solid bodies. For many years, a G&L ASAT has been my main guitar with Brian, although in recent years I went through a Gibson phase, and I've sort of been a Fender phase now, although the G&L is making its reappearance again because it just feels really solid and pro. Like when I first got the Brian Wilson gig, I looked for 6 months for a Telecaster. Anything from boutique-y $4,000 instruments to, you know, Squire or other off-brand copies. And I didn't find anything I liked. There was always something about the tone or the feel that wasn't really hitting, wasn't really a match with me. And then I went one rainy night out to Simi Valley to look at a Craigslist G&L, and in 1 minute I said, that's it. It has the sound, it has the feel, name your price. So, it was only $800, so that was fine.
But you can get those sounds like you get, because a 335 is a 335. It's a distinctive sound.
Oh, yes. I grew up on Carlton and Ford. I know that sweet tone.
Now, you have here in studio, you have this Yamaha with Yeah, it has humbuckers on it.
Yeah, I think one of
them. Does that get close to that? Can that get that sound?
Not really. I mean, this has been modified, so it has a it's what is essentially a single hum switch on it where the tone used to be.
Mm-hmm. So you can split the coil.
Right. So I split the coil or not. When I'm playing down with the Groundlings, where I used to be in the house band and sometimes sub in, this is my guitar. Not only because it's black in the pit, you can't see it that well, mm-hmm. but because I can get skanky rhythm parts and I can, you know, put it on maximum distortion with, you know, the neck pickup and the humbucker. And it has nice frets on it, too. I like this guitar a lot, this SG-2000.
But the solid body gets you that sound because the 335 has a little softer, it doesn't have as an edgier sound like a solid
right.
body.
Right. Well, I guess my real answer to your question is in the live setting, I substitute convenience for I was going to say true artistry, but not, that sounds
no,
that's not what I mean to say. I'll not give you the exact sound because those instruments will be damaged, likely to be damaged, and it's not worth it to me to have to worry about my pet baby getting damaged out on stage.
But you never looked for like a newer one or something like that, or a you know, like the 339, where it's a smaller one with the hollow body that has the same construction.
Yeah, well, I have a Norman's Rare Guitar copy of the Dotneck 59 335, and it has mini humbuckings in there now, which sound good. They're not really like this what they come with now. You know, your standard. Actually, I don't even know what the standard 335 pickups are now. But they're not. I think they're a. I have a Seth Lover pair that I transfer around from guitar to guitar. Right now, they're in a. I have a copy of a Super 400
mm-hmm.
that
oh, wow.
came with really bad pickups. But the Seth Lover is the one. So it's actually been there for about 10 years. I haven't pulled it out for a while.
Well, since you mentioned that you were an archtop, I have to play this clip because I was kind of shocked too. This is called Heal This Broken Heart. And you're doing a slide lead, but this is a K arch chop. Mm-hmm. You still have that?
Yes, I do.
The K arch.
Cost
let me play
40
this.
$40 at a yard sale.
This is a great sound. That's a great sound. I mean, it reminds me of Harrison doing it, some of his slide work.
And oh,
has that character to it.
Oh my God!
That tone.
You honor me with that. Even saying those Harrison and slide and my name in the same sentence.
No.
He's but only
now,
the best.
Now you're using the K. What amp were you using on that?
You know, probably the Yamaha G100. Also, it's funny. Listen to it now. I said that was a K, but it sounds really stratty to me. I don't know. I did take a lot of time. I mean, that has a pickup in it. It wasn't just the archtop.
It's electric.
In the archtop, but that was a feat of engineering, if that really was the K. I'm starting to now doubt my statement to you of earlier, now that I've heard it again.
Oh, okay. Well,
I used to spend a lot of time on with the Tascam 244. I would EQ things to within an inch of their lives. I would spend more time on the recording of the sounds than it would on the mix, because the mix was already kind of done. The sounds were the way I wanted going in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have to worry about them coming out.
Well, that's the thing. If you get it on the tape, then it's done. You're doing all the work on the front end instead of the back.
Right.
You know, you're not one of the guys that has to fix it in the mix, as they say, you know, when there's a problem with it. But no, it's a. I mean, that's a killer sound for a $40 guitar. I love that. It's just it's interesting because talking to Denny Tedesco with Tommy Tedesco, he used to carry in his Cadillac all these guitars, and he would just go to Norm's like, just give me a classical, for, you know, $50, $100. I don't need anything fancy, and he would go and do High Noon, which like classic
right.
guitar sound, you know. But it's interesting because some of those little gems are these funky little guitars that just have that sound. They have a great sound. And that's a great sounding guitar. I mean, if it's the K, that's a keeper.
I should have brought it in. It's zebra striped. It's yellow. It looks weird.
No, you're going to have to, next, you know you're going to have to come back. So we have to bring that in. We're going to have to bring some more of your toys in. But I'm going to play one other clip that shows another aspect. This is you playing nylon string. You said it was a Yamaha classical. And this is Hypno Love. Let me play this real quick. We're almost out of time. But let me play this because this is another tasty solo. Take a listen here. I love them.
I got a little mariachi in there.
Yeah. No, for a minute, I'm like, it had that like Peter White from the Al Stewart, that feel.
Wow.
That
cool.
feel. No, that's a great sound. But it shows, and that was a Yamaha classical, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can hear that had slapback on it and, you know, a certain reverb that I can't remember who, Nick or Darian mixed that of the Wondermints. But they were the sonic architects.
Well, that clip's from the Wondermints.
Right.
Yes. That's a great sounding guitar too. You still have that one?
Yes, I do.
That Yamaha just sounds great. It's a clean. I mean, the articulation. Part of it's you're playing, but you're just like all those notes are clear and it rings really well and it had a great tone to it.
Oh, thanks.
So no, that's a great one. Well, we're already out of time. I told you we'd go by really fast. I want to thank you for coming on is there any upcoming gigs with Brian or anybody else that's coming up that you want to mention?
You know, I don't even know the date of it. We have something in near Palm Springs at Fantasy Springs Casino, and I think it's the 19th of March. And then we're doing a little L.A. thing. We're going to be at the Pantages, as far as I know, in May 28 or 9, and in the Santa Barbara Bowl. But no, nothing else in particular. It's too bad. I had promised some people that I was going to play the GIT Funk Army lick, but I guess that'll have to wait till next time if we're really out of time. Or we could do it. I guess you have your standard rollout.
Well, I'm going to play a clip of you taking us out. But,
is it that one?
It's called the closest Desert Waiting for the Rain, which is a beautiful. It's got a great wah lead on there and layered guitars in it. It's a very all cool right. thing. But what is the riff? Do you want to play it real quick?
I could play it quick, sure. It's like this. It goes. This in a group of us marching around the hallways of GIT, if you can imagine this, unamplified on solid body electrics.
That's a great little riff.
Yeah, it was kind of fun.
And then real quick, Lori, there's something coming up tomorrow.
Sure, but I also wanted to mention, since the listeners probably are everywhere globally, that Brian's touring, so wherever you are, you'll check it out, and you'll see Probin up in usually the top left-hand corner of the stage. we have our group, the Tribe, that I perform in. We're doing another iconic album show. This one, again, is going to be Elton John's classic album, double album of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, up in Santa Barbara, and that will be tomorrow night, Tuesday, and that is at Soho in Santa Barbara. SOHOSB.com.
That's where they get tickets, or is there?
Yeah, right on the website of the
no phone
of
number
the venue. Well, there is, but I don't have it memorized. Okay. So they like the website.
They like to use the website.
Yeah, come and see us. We're getting great reviews. We actually were written up in the LA Weekly for the last show, which was really nice. Yeah.
Well, great. I definitely have to have you back on, Probin. And now that I know you have toys, the next show is going to be a toy show.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I didn't even get to play my Nashville tuning guitar with all the high strings. That'll be another time.
Well, we'll have to do that. But I'm going to play this clip, Desert Waiting for the Rain. And it's got the wah. I presume you said it was a Strat. Mm. And I just want to get, and there's some other guitars in it. Do you remember what you were doing in it?
No, it might have been the 335. One of them sounds a little warmer, but it also could have just been the Strat with my tones, you know, adjusted to make it not as bright.
Okay. It's a great clip, and I edited two pieces, so this one runs about 2 minutes. It's a beautiful, but you'll, again, tasteful leads, just really tasteful stuff that you're doing in there. Thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you, Lori, for introducing
Absolutely.
Me to it. It's really an honor and privilege to have you on the show, and we're going to have to set up something really quick to have you back, because I want to get more of the toys.
We have to go over Brian's schedule to make sure when you're in town, you're back on.
So, but anyway, everybody have a great week, and this is Desert Waiting for the Rain. Have a good night. We'll see you next week.
I might have still been there. Instead, you sit on